Be seated. My message this morning is titled Marked by Love. And I actually thought it was kind of a fitting message after the display of love that I seen in this church this morning as we were working through Linda and what's going on, and the number of people that stepped up to volunteer, the people that got on their knees in prayer, was very moving. But 2 weeks ago, we began this series on what it means to be a Christian and what it means to truly belong to Jesus Christ. And this week, I wanted to look at one of the most important examples of what it means to be a Christian, and that is love. We go ahead, and love is often talked about in our culture today. And love is often defined as emotional, but it's also defined as conditional, right? Like, I will love you if you treat me well. I will love you if you love me back, right? But what we're here to talk about this morning is biblical love. And this is the kind of love that many of you probably see in your marriages today. It's love that remains when life is painful. It's the love that remains when you have to choose grace over bitterness. It is the kind of love that reflects Jesus Christ in this world, right? In this broken world. And in John 13, 34 through 35, we go ahead and we reflect on this, and it says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Think about that for a moment. Jesus did not say that this world would know that we're Christians by the church building, right? They wouldn't know us by our politics. He didn't say that they would know us about how loudly we can argue theology. We went ahead and seen that this morning during Bible study, where we went ahead and seen where the same religious leaders that crucified Jesus Christ went ahead and started going after the apostles, right? These were people that could quote the Bible inside and out at that time, right? The Torah, but they did not have love. And biblical love is often proven during suffering. And last Sunday, when I had it marked 1 year since one of the hardest days of my life, a year ago last Sunday, I went ahead and had to speak at the funeral of my best friend, Lewis Bell, and his wife, Martha. It was a dual funeral. And as I prepared the words for that funeral, my mind kept going back to the life they lived. See, there was two sides of Lewis. There was the side of Lewis that went ahead and grew up in a small rural town about 2 hours outside of Atlanta. The Lewis that could barely go ahead and be understood if you didn't live in the deep south. And if you met him as a teenager, you probably would never have imagined that someday he would teach dictation, adult education, and public speaking for Fortune 500 companies. And that's how I met Lewis. I met him through one of the companies that he worked with, and he taught me about adult education. He taught me how to do public speaking. He went ahead and taught me how adults learn, and he taught me how to better pronounce and enunciate words. And as you can probably tell, only some of the lessons stuck. And then, during my time with Lewis, I had the distinct honor of meeting his wife, Martha. And Martha was everything Lewis was not. She was patient. Lewis had no patience for anyone. She was outgoing. Lewis was very reserved. And she was often very transparent in her faith. There wasn't one person that Martha met that she did not talk to about the love of Jesus Christ. And at this point, you're like, well, Jeremy, where's your sermon going this morning? What does this have to do with Christian love? And I'm here to tell you this has everything to do with love. Because before corporate America, Lewis and Martha served as youth pastors at one of the fastest growing churches in Colorado. They poured themselves into the students there, they disciplined the youth, and they loved people deeply. They had over 1,500 young individuals that attended their church. And then one Sunday afternoon, what Lewis and Martha thought was the perfect life, that they were living in God's will and God's plan, Lewis collapsed in the middle of preaching from severe pain. The doctors discovered aggressive cancer that had spread throughout his entire abdomen. And after surgery and a treatment plan, you would think that the church that they had poured so much into would surround them with love and support, just like I seen this church do this morning for Linda. But that's not what happened in their lives. See, Martha, when she went to school, had gone for accounting. And she had started noticing some financial irregularities in the church's books. And Lewis, just prior to this event, had reported these financial irregularities to the board and to the senior pastor. And while Lewis was in the hospital fighting for his life and Martha was at his side, the church that they cared so much for, about, and loved and poured so much into terminated them. And immediately, they had no insurance, they had no housing, and they had no income. For years, Lewis and Martha struggled. They lived in their car, barely surviving while Lewis underwent treatment. Martha would often have to carry him into the hospital to get his treatment. And at moments like this in life, many people would choose to walk away from God. And honestly, I could understand why. But in Job 1:20 through 22, we went ahead and we see where Job has just had lost everything. He lost his house, he lost his children, he lost his source of income. And it says this: at this, Job got up and tore his robe and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship. Can you imagine that? You just lost everything, and you fall to the ground in worship and said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." In all of this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. After losing nearly everything except for his life and his wife, Job worshiped. Not because he understood everything, not because he enjoyed suffering, but because pain did not change who God was to Job. Pain often has the ability to reveal where we run. In suffering, people usually have two directions in which they can move. They can move towards God, or they can run away from God. We've seen multiple examples of that throughout the Bible. And in Lewis and Martha's life, I've seen an example of both. Martha, through this pain and suffering, leaned into God, and Lewis ran away from his faith. He became angry, bitter, and he despised Christianity. And honestly, there may be some of you in this church this very morning who knows exactly how Lewis felt. You know what church hurt feels like. And some of the deepest wounds that people carry can come from people inside the church. But hear me carefully this morning. Human failure does not cancel the goodness of God. In Psalms 34:18, we're reminded the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. I'm here to tell you this morning that Christians will fail you. Pastors will fail you. Churches will fail you. But Jesus Christ never fails. And it was actually interesting because during our Bible study this morning, they had opened up the Bible and we were going through Psalms 118. And Psalms 118, verse 8, is actually the exact middle of the Bible. And it tells you exactly that, that humanity will fail you, but God himself never will. And Martha understood that very important lesson, because for her, the love of Christ never disappeared. It just looked differently. Even through suffering, even through uncertainty, poverty, she went ahead and knew what Christian love truly was. And I'm here to tell you this morning, if you've been through that, if you're experiencing that church hurt, if you're experiencing that pain, if you feel that God has let you down, God can redeem whatever man destroys. Because years later in Lewis's life, I saw him start to reconnect with believers. And it wasn't through large churches, it wasn't through a program outreach. But you know how Lewis started reconnecting with God? It was through a small Bible study that was held in a neighbor's garage. Because there was no formality, he didn't feel like he was being pushed towards church. And this Bible study was made up of former pastors, people that were wounded by church experiences, and people that simply wanted to get together to experience God. Because for what man had intended for evil, God was using for good. In Romans 8:28, we're reminded, and we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. This verse does not say that all things are going to be good. We're reminded of this every single day. We're reminded of cancer, betrayal, and death. None of them are good things, right? They're all things that we have to deal with. But God can still work through that brokenness. And my relationship with Lewis and Martha had matured over the years, and we'd gone ahead and we would communicate quite frequently. And one day, I received a text message from Lewis, and it simply stated, "My heart is broken." And then there was a follow-up message that said Martha had been just diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And I remember calling Lewis, and I had actually put it off for several hours before I called him because I really didn't know what to say at that moment. I didn't know how I could comfort him. I didn't know what I could do. But I did call him. I prayed with him. I did some weeping with him. And then I went ahead and I prayed for the healing of Martha. I prayed for Lewis's strength. And this was on Monday evening. On Friday, Martha went ahead and made it home. And after being home within a couple hours, she became unresponsive and they had to rush her back to the hospital. And the following Tuesday, I was actually on a flight to Florida to help with a church plant that I'd been doing in Southwest Florida. And as the plane was coming in for the final landing and I was on Wi-Fi, I got a text message from Lewis again saying that Martha had passed away. And immediately after landing, I went ahead and called him. And I tried to comfort my friend of so many years the best I could. I asked him if there was anything that he needed and anything I could do. But even at that moment, it felt hollow. Like, what could I do when he just lost his life? And he simply said, "Jeremy, I want to go home. And only mere hours later, while I was running sound during worship practice, I received another message. Probably the toughest message I've ever received in my life. And that was a message saying goodbye. I dropped everything at that moment, and I started calling his phone repeatedly. And I couldn't get a hold of him. So I called one of his neighbors who rushed over and found that Lewis had taken his life. And I'm here to tell you this morning that God is still good, even in the middle of grief. And that night, when I had received that text message, our worship team was in the middle of practicing the song, "The Goodness of God." And if you've ever heard that song goes, "All my life you have been faithful. All my life you've been good." Right? And I was so angry when I heard that song, because grief can sometimes do that to you. Pain can make worship so difficult. And when they went to sing that song that evening, I struggled so hard with that. And some of you here this morning have also had to deal with pain like this and deal with these emotions. Maybe you've had to bury a loved one. Maybe you personally have received a destroying diagnosis or a devastating diagnosis. And maybe you have prayed over and over again for someone in your life, for their salvation, for healing, for blessings, and you haven't seen those prayers answered. Yet the scripture still calls us back to truth. And in Micah 6:8, it says, "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? He requires you to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with God." Because God calls his people to continue walking with him even in the midst of pain. In the Bible, throughout scriptures, we see that Christian love has the ability to point people to Christ. Because less than a week later, I stood in the garage in Montrose, Colorado, preparing to speak at the funeral of these individuals. And before I had the opportunity to give my message, one of the pastors that worshiped in that garage stepped forward and began to sing the words of that song, "The Goodness of God." And this pastor and Martha had been working on that song just days before she went to the hospital with her sickness. And at that moment, I threw away my notes because I knew that what I had written could not go ahead and talk about what God wanted. And I preached from my heart. I preached about the grief that everyone in that room was experiencing. I preached about pain and how it changes us. And I preached about loss. But I went ahead and I also had the fantastic opportunity of preaching about hope, about the hope and comfort that we find in Jesus Christ. And because of Lewis and Martha's lives and what they have gone through, over 1,100 people from around the world were tuned into that service, from China to Australia to India to France. And I don't know how many lives that were touched by that service, but two people sitting in the garage that night went ahead and surrendered to Jesus Christ. And I know that Martha would have endured every hardship that she went through in life. She would have endured every issue that she experienced if one more soul could find peace in Jesus Christ. And that is what I'm here to proclaim, Christian love. Because in 1 John 4:7-12, it says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love amongst us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. I'm here to tell you Christian love is not ever proven when life is easy. Christian love is proven when life hurts and you still choose Christ. In 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 3, we're reminded, if I speak in the tongues of men or angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Without love, Christianity is but a noise. You can have all of the theology in the world. You could quote all of the scriptures. You can talk about how the Old Testament relates to the New Testament, but if you don't have love, it is simply religion. Because religion without love is meaningless. Church attendance without love is meaningless. But I'm here to say, if Christ truly lives in you this morning, his love will be visible in your life. And I want you to ask yourself, who needs to experience the love of Christ through you? Is it someone that you know that's grieving? Maybe someone that's lonely? Maybe they're wounded? Maybe it's someone out that everyone else has forgotten? The world does not need more Christians in name only. The world needs followers of Jesus Christ whose lives generally reflect his love. And maybe today that you realize that without Jesus in your lives and without knowing him personally, you can never show true love, because true love is unattainable on our own. It comes from surrendering your lives to Jesus Christ. The same Jesus who comforts the brokenhearted, the same Jesus who walks with us through suffering, the same Jesus that conquered death itself is still here and is still calling people today. And just maybe he's calling you this morning. I would like to go ahead and stand and sing "Just As I Am," page 293.